following is a presentation of Crane's Chicago Business, delivered by your earbuds at WGN Radio.
I'm Amy Guth, and this is Crane's Daily Gist. Today, a look at how the trucking industry stands to gain from the fuel tax bill and perspective on this week's top residential real estate stories with Crane's reporter, Dennis Rodkin. All that's coming up right after these stories. The billionaire co-founder of the Paul Mitchell hair care brand has purchased the former McDonald's HQ in Oak Brook, setting up a potential redevelopment of the 80-acre West Suburban property in the wake of the fast food giant's relocation downtown. John Paul DeJoria, co-founder of the LA-based John Paul Mitchell Systems, bought the property according to a statement from Jones Lang LaSalle, which rep McDonald's in the sale. The deal stands to breathe new life into one of the highest profile corporate campuses in the burbs that was abandoned by its longtime tenant when McDonald's moved its global HQ to Fulton Market last year. The property, which includes a headquarters building, an educational center, and a Hyatt Hotel, was one of 10 sites the city of Chicago submitted in its 2017 bid to lure Amazon's second headquarters. In yesterday's episode, I spoke with Crane's Chicago Business senior reporter Albie Galoon about the One Central mega development project. Last night, residents voiced concerns at a meeting held over the mixed-use project. Booing echoed through the crowd when residents learned there would be a workshop with a project team after the presentations instead of an open discussion. Alderman Pat Dowell ultimately allowed 11 people to talk and ask questions. To recap, the multi-billion dollar One Central project, in line to receive up to $5.1 billion in state money, would be built on 34 acres over train tracks just west of Soldier Field. Tentative plans include a major transportation center linking Metra, CTA, and Amtrak service, residential towers, parking, and retail space. Dowell, whose ward includes the development site, hosted an initial community meeting on the topic in March after Landmark Development unveiled its preliminary plans. Last night's meeting was touted as the beginning of a community engagement process that will last several months. Though the General Assembly recently signed off on a deal that would allow the developer to secure the $5.1 billion in equity and financing costs, the city of Chicago still needs to approve a zoning change for the project. More on this story and others at chicagobusiness.com. Coming up, a look at the top residential real estate stories this week with Crane's reporter Dennis Rodkin. That conversation after a quick word from our sponsor. At Wintrust, there's no one-size-fits-all solution because there's no one-size-fits-all business. They come in different sizes, in different industries, with different needs. You won't get cookie-cutter services based on your size. Wintrust provides personalized focus no matter what kind of business you run. Whether you're looking for deposit accounts, lending options, or treasury management solutions, Wintrust bankers are prepared to meet your business where you are and help you get to where you want to be. Find out more at Wintrust.com. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender. We're joined now by Crane's Chicago Business residential real estate reporter Dennis Rodkin for his weekly check on what's happening in the residential real estate world here in Chicago and surrounding areas. And so you often come in here with such a great, funny attitude, but you deliver very bad news in such a cheery way.
I'm sorry.
It's okay. It's it's the occupational hazard. It's what you must do.
That's exactly it. It's the market.
But it seems like we have some mixed news this week.
We do. You know, at the top of the market, at the highest end of the market, things are really going fast. In the course of 4 days, we had two condos sell at over $6 million. One on East Lakeshore Drive, not technically a condo, but a co-op, but it's multifamily housing. And the other at One Bennett Park, a new tower that's going up in Streeterville. I looked back into my records, and the last time we had two sales over $6 million in the course of a week was this time last year, June. So June seems to be a good time for closings of $6 million properties. But the real point here is we are running ahead. I keep track, I have for several years, of sales at $4 million and up. That's really the top of the market. The very, very top is the $58 million where Ken Griffin bought. But generally, from $4 to $12 million is the upper end of our market. Last year, we set a record with about 75 sales at $4 million and up. This year, as of that sale that I reported yesterday, we're running ahead of where we were this time last year. So even though I've been coming in here saying, oh, sales are down at all prices, people are having a hard time selling, it is true at the very top of the market that things are getting bought. One thing to keep in mind is the top five, maybe the top seven priced sales of the year so far are almost all condos. There's one house in that group, but it might be 7 out of the top 10. I'd have to check my list again, but it's at least 6 out of the top 7 are condos, most of them new condos. So that sort of is one of the things we're seeing is that's the place where it's really happening.
Which is completely in line with other conversations we've had in previous weeks of more people moving to the city, fewer suburban sales. Very interesting. Well, one in particular that was, well, actually it wouldn't have made your list of 4 million and up. It would have been just below it. And that was the condo of ex-Bear Brandon Marshall. You reported that he sold his Michigan Avenue condo at a loss.
Considerable loss. Yeah, he bought it for 3.9 in 2014, 3.9 million in 2014. He has more than 4 million in it. I don't know how much, but his listing agent told me about improvements he made. There's more than $4 million in it. He listed it at 5. He just sold it at 3.2 million. And again, he bought it at 3.9 5 years ago. Sold it at 3.2 million.
I can't imagine a reality in which, you know, you the buyer go, yeah, I got this for $1 million off.
Exactly. This what a deal.
What a deal. And it's beautiful. You've got a, there's a photo at the...
You know what makes it a deal? I mean, it's hard to put a dollar figure on this, but this is truly one of the most amazing rooms. I've been in this room to shoot video and to write stories in the past. So this is in 6 North Michigan, which was once the headquarters of Montgomery Ward. It's sort of a Venetian-style building. His living room was an open-air observatory. Tourists coming to Chicago could take the elevator up, stand in this open-air room beneath the... There was a tall sort of witch's cap on top of the building that is gone now. This is now the top of the building. And you could stand and look out at the city. Over time, it was enclosed. And then in the 21st century, when the building was converted to condos, that room became the centerpiece of this condo that Marshall ended up buying. It's a beautiful room. I don't think I have in Chicago been in a better looking living room. I mean, the views are incredible, and the arches and the columns and the terracotta and the carvings, it's pretty remarkable. The strange thing is, though, the rest of the condo doesn't look like that.
That's my next question is, don't tell me the rest of it doesn't match.
Yeah, you get this great room, and then it's all modern finishes. I mean, you know, somebody could go in and try to make it look classical like that, but you'd probably look fake and cheap.
Sure.
So what they did is they redid it as sort of a contemporary place, not, you know, space age wild, but just real clean and crisp. So when you're in the living room, that's the living room. When you're in the dining room, the kitchen, the study, those kinds of things, it's a very different experience. And the other problem with this condo is that room is great. The other rooms are all spread out over. It's on 5 levels. It doesn't have an interior elevator. You can put one in, but, you know, you're sleeping on one floor and your guests are 3 stories down and the kitchen is 2 stories, is on another story, that sort of thing. It's because it's in the tower of the building.
Well, you don't need a Stairmaster.
Yeah,
you
exactly.
You just run around the house.
Well, one person said to me when Marshall bought it, well, you know, he's got to work out.
That's
this is the place for it. The problem is if you're... Not all $3.2 million buyers are members of the Bears.
That's right. Yeah. Well, again, there's a photo of this room at chicagobusiness.com. You can check it out. And then another story this week was, I love this feature that you do where you take a dollar amount and you say, this is what this will get you here, here, and here. And where did that take you this week?
Condo over Lincoln Park and a house in Wicker Park right across the street from where Nelson Algren lived. And then a great big house in a very nice neighborhood in Elmhurst. So the idea is sometimes I do $750,000, $500,000, that sort of thing. This particular month, I went for $2 million and found that people got some very good deals. The one in Elmhurst is large. I mean, and when you drive up to it, it looks, the front photos make it, it's a big house. But it's got very beautiful finishes inside. It's got this great swimming pool. It's quite a house. And then the one in Wicker Park, the one across from where Nelson Algren lived, is on Evergreen. So it's on, I mean, it's a beautiful street.
That is a pretty street.
Yeah. And it's quiet. It's slow because it's got that V shape because it essentially wraps the park, though it's a block away. And so you don't get a lot of traffic. And it's this great old late 19th century brick building. I mean, it's a classic Wicker Park building, but then inside all new and with a rooftop deck, also new.
That's a prized possession in the city, I feel like, the rooftop. Because I've long said, my favorite thing about Chicago is this. When it is warm enough to be outside, all of us in this city act like it is our last day on earth.
Yeah. Everybody runs outside.
We go outside. Like, we'll shovel snow in a parka just to be outside. Like, it's warm enough. I'm going to do this. And there's this wonderful, like, carpe diem that happens in the warm months here that's lovely. So the rooftop thing is a valuable possession.
One of the later evolutions of the rooftop deck is part of it being covered so that it just extends your season, which I think is wonderful. Some people have used those, I can't remember what they're called, the sort of folding window walls, so that you might have, let's say, 200 square feet inside, 200 outside. Obviously, you're going to have more than that. But when you open it up in the right weather, you've got the whole space. But yeah, I think the sort of history and evolution of the rooftop deck is maybe the book we should write.
We? You're the expert. I mean, that's generous of you to throw me a byline here, but you're the expert. I would just be like, uh-huh, tell me more of that. Another story that you had this week is about a very, very big, big house.
Yeah, the possibility of building a very big house. This is on Orchard, which is in those blocks south of Lincoln Park High School. Burling, Orchard, Howe, and what starts with an A, I guess Armitage. And because somebody, a reader once told me that it should be called the Whoa Baby neighborhood because of the, it would make an acronym.
I mean, you can start that. That could be a thing you do.
I tried. Maybe today it'll happen. For 20 years, really, people have been building these big mansions. Several people have. The former Commerce Secretary Penny Pritzker lives up there. There are others. The first, I think, was the art collecting couple Lou Manilow and his wife's name is skipping my memory right now, but they built back in the 90s on Howe, a big multi-lot house so that they could put their art collection in. And they sort of led the way. At the time, there were houses still with tar paper shingles on the front, that sort of thing. Now, 20 plus years later, you walk down those streets and it looks like a street of orphanages or convents because there are these massive houses. And now you can build an even more massive one. There is a development firm, BGD&C, that had a four-lot parcel they were offering, so that's about 100 feet wide, and they've just bought the fifth lot, and it comes to 130 because it's a slightly larger lot. So they had a parcel where they would build for you a 28,000-square-foot house. Apparently, that wasn't big enough because nobody was buying it. Now that they've got the new lot, they can build you a 37,000-square-foot house. Right there in the middle of Lincoln Park.
Which is almost too big to even fathom.
Well, for you and me, but
well, sure. To us mere mortals.
Exactly. But there are so many houses nearly that size in there. And so it's not necessarily true that somebody will build 37,000 square feet. They may do something that's been happening in more recent years is that while you may have a lot that allows a whole lot of house, you may build less because what you want is that suburban style yard. So they build less and they might build something that sort of integrates indoor and out, that sort of thing. But the point of this is that you at least have the capacity if you need 37,000 square feet, like if you have 37 children.
I would say, what do you need that for?
Exactly.
Right. But it's really, so unheard of in the city to think of that. I mean, I think of a couple that I've seen that are three lots and they look just giant next to the one lot condo building next to them. So a five lot home is just kind of too much to fathom.
Wow. There's at least one other in the neighborhood. There's one that a couple built just about a block away. Actually, no, there are at least two in the neighborhood because there is one that is seven lots. That's the house that's for sale for $45 million now.
Is that all?
Yeah, exactly. On seven lots. And, you know, I think part of that is you talk about the single lot. We're so used to when we walk around Chicago, that 25-foot frontage is standard, and you see it anywhere you go, and so you're used to, sort of in your mind's eye, a house is a certain width.
That's right.
Then you get to these blocks, these whoa baby blocks, and you think, this should be in Lake Forest or wherever they used to build the giant houses.
Well, whoa baby is now a thing for neighborhood.
I'm so glad.
I'm declaring it. It happened here on Crane's Daily Gist. Well, thanks for being with us today and keeping us up to date on all things real estate.
Thanks, Amy.
As a footnote, the streets we were discussing earlier are Willow, Howe, Orchard, Armitage, and Burling. Continuing a look at the headlines today, former Chicago Mayor Rahm Emanuel plans to resume his role as an investment banker, joining the New York investment banking boutique Centerview Partners to establish a presence for the firm in Chicago. That's according to a statement from the company. Emanuel has been appointed a senior counselor for the company and will be based here, according to the statement. Investment bankers often lean on political, corporate, and personal relationships to forge mergers and acquisitions in the business world. Most of the big New York banks and many of the investment banking boutiques that have sprung up over the past decade also have Chicago offices. In a statement this week, Mayor Lori Lightfoot said she'll be introducing a new ethics reform package to the June 12th City Council meeting that would both rein in aldermanic moneymaking and subject aldermen to stronger oversight. Two key changes: restrictions on holding any outside job that poses a potential liability or conflict of interest with city business, and empowering Inspector General Joe Ferguson to investigate aldermen to the same extent he does with any other city employee. The second one is a provision aldermen long have resisted and that even now may stir considerable opposition. The mayor is also proposing to expand fines for ethics violations from $500 to $5,000 per violation. Lightfoot earlier pushed through a leadership shakeup of the city council and moved to strip aldermen of their control over routine zoning and permit issues. She indicated she intends to bring forward new legislation that increases transparency in the city zoning process in the future. More on this story at chicagobusiness.com. Coming up, truckers are pretty happy the fuel tax is being doubled. Wait, what? We'll talk about it more right after this word from our sponsor. Running a small business comes with hard work, a fair amount of stress, and a lot of responsibility. Wintrust believes you shouldn't have to manage that alone. The company's small business bankers are true partners. They get to know the business they work with so they can offer personalized support and tools that help owners reach their long-term goals. If you're looking for a true banking partner, you've found one. Visit Wintrust.com to learn more. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender. Illinois trucking companies are thrilled to start paying a 100% increase in the state's gas tax because it swaps a fee that supported the state's overall finances for a tax that ultimately benefits the trucking industry. The $45 billion capital plan passed by the General Assembly doubles the gas tax from 19 cents to 38 cents a gallon, the first hike in nearly three decades, and ties it to inflation. The rate for drivers of diesel-powered commercial trucks rises even higher to 45.5 cents a gallon. The plan pays for infrastructure improvements like roads, bridges, and transit systems. Truckers pushed to raise the gas tax as long as it was guaranteed to go toward infrastructure upgrades, which the Illinois Constitution was amended in 2016 to do. The better roads mean more freight can be hauled and at faster speeds, meaning more money for truckers. The bill that raised the gas tax also repealed the commercial distribution fee, a victory for the Illinois Trucking Association. The executive director called the repeal the organization's number one priority since the General Assembly approved the fee 15 years ago. Thanks for listening. Until next week, that's all for Crane's Daily Gist. Special thanks to producer Haima Black. Find business news, analysis, data, and more at chicagobusiness.com. Let's continue the conversation with hashtag Crane's Daily Gist or find me, Amy Guth, on Twitter.